Welcome to Mommy Heal Thyself. We feature guests who provide you with the tools, resources, and strategies you need to say no to a life of pain and suffering from all forms of preventable disease, toxic drugs, and unnecessary surgeries. We hope to inspire you to boldly reclaim your ability to heal and to serve the ones you love.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. Today, I have with me the pleasure of speaking with Michael Ramey. He's the president of the Parental Rights Foundation, a national nonprofit organization dedicated to the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their minor children. He also serves on the governing board of United Family Advocates and the executive committee of the Coalition to End Hidden Foster Care, two national bipartisan policy efforts to keep families together. Michael earned his BA at Virginia Commonwealth University and his Master of Divinity from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, both with honors. And most importantly, at least to me, he is the father of five children whom he and his wife homeschool. Michael, thank you so very much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I tell you, the pleasure and the wonderful blessing of five children. I know that wonderful experience myself because I have five children. And so I'm curious as to what brought you into this realm of advocating for parental rights.
Actually, it's kind of an interesting story in that it's so not interesting. My father-in-law became the executive director of this organization, parentalrights.org, which is the precursor. It's a 501c4 precursor to the Parental Rights Foundation, which is 501c3 nonprofit. And he needed somebody who could communicate well and who could write. So he brought me in to help do that. But you can't communicate about parental rights without understanding it and learning it. So I had to do a deep dive and find out what it is I need to be communicating. And in doing so, I just learned so much. And of course, I'm very passionate about it because I'm a father myself and have children that I recognize are better off with me than with the government. So it became very personal along the way. But it started off, I needed a job and there was a job available in communications. So that's where I started.
I'm curious, your experience with this organization, has it or did it inspire you to homeschool or was it vice versa?
No, we were already determined to homeschool. And I'm trying to think how the timing went down because I've been here since 2008. We started homeschooling my oldest, a year or two before that. So, we were already homeschooling But the more we look at it, the more we're grateful that we have. And that's not condescending or judging people whose kids are in public school or private school. For us, it's simpler and easier and more peaceful to homeschool because we know from the start who's having an influence on our kids and the things that they're learning because that's us. So it's just in some respects that's a lot easier than being responsible, because as parents, we're still responsible for the upbringing and the education of our children, even if we kind of outsource it to somebody else. So we have to know what they're learning and we have to know what they're being taught and who's doing the teaching. And that's a lot of homework.
Well, I'm curious, you know, why would you say that we need to know what our children are being taught and who is teaching them and things of that nature? I mean, aren't our children basically just learning the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic? I mean, what's going on? Why should we be concerned? Why is it so important for us to have this understanding and also to have an understanding of what our parental rights are? What's going on?
Well, I think since 2020, really, parents don't even need me to answer that question. Parents really woke up when the schools sent their children home during the COVID pandemic and did schooling from home, and parents were able to look over their child's shoulder and see the things they were learning and see the things they were being exposed to. And there's a reason that our reading scores are so low and our math scores are so low, because they're not highlighting skills and they're not highlighting proficiency in those areas. They're highlighting a more of a social agenda and want children to grow up believing a certain way. It's almost kind of a religious aspect to it, and not in every school and not in every classroom, but far too often. And so it really is just a mess out there. And parents became aware of that, like I said, during the pandemic. And so they know now, as well as or better than I do, because they saw it firsthand with their kids. And again, I was homeschooling mine. And so they know it's not just reading, writing, and arithmetic, that, there's a whole different world and a whole different worldview going on in the classroom. And you've got to be careful about, what your child is learning, because ultimately you're the expert on your child, and you're the one responsible for your child. And I'm really proud of parents in general, since 2020, when they saw that they weren't just like, oh no, they've made a mess of my kid. Oh well, there's nothing I can do about it. They said, no, wait a second, I'm the parent. The buck stops with me. I'm going to do something about it.
Well, you and I may be very aware of what's happening in our schools. I also have perspective. Not only was I a homeschooling parent, but I also taught in our educational system. And I was just flabbergasted as a teacher to find out what was happening. One of my main concerns that I've been advocating for over 20 years now is over medicalization of our children. Back when I was teaching, there was a significant push to put our children on ADD meds and things of that nature. And now it's just expanded to include a whole lot more. Subsequently, I would love for you to go into two things. Number one, to give us more of an awareness of what are some of the non-academic things that are being integrated into our children's curriculums that we as parents need to be aware of. And secondly, for you to give us a little bit more of an insight into what's happening as it pertains to mental health issues. I know there's recently they have started to expand to do some really nefarious things. And I think I would love for you to explore that with our audience.
Sure. Well, to the first part of your question, I think I would just refer to a Supreme Court case that was just decided at the end of June, just a couple months ago, Mahmoud versus Taylor, which came out of Baltimore. And it had to do with it was a Jewish family, a Catholic family, and a Muslim family came together and brought their case against the Baltimore school system, because the school system was teaching the sort of LGBTQ gender ideology and this kind of thing to children, even in the youngest of grades. And if they put it in the curriculum, the parents can know about that and have an opportunity to opt out. But they were incorporating stories and books into the classroom and then requiring children to read those. And at first they allowed parents to opt out. And then they said, well, this is too much paperwork for us, too much administration, too many parents opting out. We're going to just remove that option, and it's there. The kids need to just do this. And the parents said, no, wait a minute, you're inculcating values into my child that I disagree with. And the state of Maryland argued, no, it's not values, it's just education, and this kind of thing. But the Supreme Court sided with the parents, and they said, no, this is inculcating values in the way it's being done. You are pushing on these children a worldview contrary to that of their parents. And another argument that the state made was, well, the parents can choose to homeschool or send their kids to private school. And the Supreme Court, I think, wisely recognized that that's not a financial option for a lot of parents. And so saying that, this is a right that's only preserved for parents who send their kids to private or homeschool, that's no right at all. And so the Supreme Court again sided with the parents and said, no, you can't do that. So it's, when you come down to inculcating values in the child, that's an area reserved to the family and to parents. And so I was really grateful that the Supreme Court upheld that and sort of restored a bit of that. Because there were some cases back in like 1995, Fields versus Palmdale, and in the early 2000s, I want to say it was like 2003, but it might be 2006. My brain's not quite sharp on that one. In Parker v. Hurley out of the First Circuit, the Fields v. Palmdale was the Ninth Circuit. Neither is a Supreme Court case. But But in both instances, basically the attitude of the court was your parental rights essentially end at the classroom door. Once you decide, Parker B. Hurley said basically, once the parent decides to send their child to the public school, then their parental rights are greatly diminished. If you want to exercise your parental rights, take your child out of this public school and send them someplace else, basically. And so Mahmoud V. Taylor kind of pushes back on that and says, no, parents still have rights in inculcating values in their children that you're not supposed to mess with, even in inside the schoolroom door. So that was a good and exciting ruling that will help there.
And it, I think one of the key things that you're bringing up is for parents to really be aware of what their children are learning, what books are being utilized. And it's important because the weaving of certain ideologies is insidious. I mean, it can be woven into everything, including mathematics books.
Right.
How do you say, Michelle? Because in math, we have quote unquote problem solving, And so they'll weave certain things into what you would perceive as being innocuous, like, oh, they're just learning math or they're just learning science, But no, you have to be very, very aware as a parent. Go through your child's textbooks, look at your children's assignments, have conversations with your children, because that was one of the ways that I actually became aware of this. Now, it is crazy because I was a math teacher and an English teacher, and I had no awareness that they were starting to put that into the curriculum. What do I mean? My children had a conversation with me, and they said, yeah, Susie had their books. And I was like, what are you talking about? Their books. Susie had her books. And they're like, no, mom, no, mom. It's supposed to be they. I'm like, what the heck? We're talking about, you and I went through the basics of grammar, subject verb agreement kind of thing. But that is where they're slowly weaving this into the curriculum. And I'm here in Florida. I'm not in one of the blue states. And that's why I'm saying be very, very aware of how this is woven into conversations, how it's woven into your child's assignments, how it's woven into the books, because these teachers are all being taught at certain types of universities. And that is where this is coming from. It's coming all the way back into the teaching of the teachers.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a Spanish major, and so even more in Spanish than in English, there you have to know if a verb is masculine or feminine, or a noun or an adjective is masculine or feminine. And that's just, I mean, Spanish words have a masculine or feminine that we don't even think of as masculine or feminine. It's just, it's a car. What do you mean it's masculine? A coche is masculine. That kind of thing. And so then for us to be twisting the language around to try to pretend, it's just confusing.
It's confusing and it's dangerous and it's deadly because now we are in that zone of pushing this type of ideology, like you said, this religion, which is having a significant impact on the psycho, emotional, mental aspects of our children and subsequently physical. And, that leads us to the next part of my question with regards to what's happening or what's coming down the turnpike for our school systems as it relates to quote unquote mental health.
Right, and the concern there is that there are some states passing laws to increase screenings and increase testing to find, what children are having mental health issues and this kind of thing, so that they can put them on the proper, put them on the proper treatment, which is a fancy way of saying, give them drugs, right? So, but it's concerning because the more they do these screenings, they're going looking for problems for the school to try to solve, as though parents aren't capable of recognizing problems and solving them ourselves. And so one thing I would really want your listeners to know about is the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment, which is a federal law passed in 1978, sometimes called the Hatch Amendment. It was passed 4 years after FERPA, the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act which was passed in 1974. And so these two kind of go together. And FERPA guards your privacy, the privacy of your child's student records. But significantly, FERPA also includes you, the parent, as the rights holder. You are inside the sphere of confidentiality with your child. So those records are private, but they are not private from you. They are private for you and your child. The Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment kind of expands a little bit. It goes into some more detail on some of these. It's some of the things protected by FERPA, or wants to make sure kind of alongside things protected by FERPA, and it covers these surveys, these screenings that they do. And so, first of all, parents have the right to review any curriculum or material, or even the teacher guidance related to any teaching, related to the survey or analysis or evaluation that the school is doing. And then, secondly, there are eight areas or topics that are specifically named in the legislation, in this federal law, that say parents have to opt in to those. The school has to secure the parents' written permission before they can ask your child about their or their family's political beliefs, mental problems, sex behaviors or attitudes, anything self-incriminating, any antisocial behaviors, any critical appraisals of somebody close to the family, any relationships with lawyers, doctors, ministers, or other people with whom you have a confidential relationship, their religious beliefs or practices, and the family's income levels. And the exception to the income level being, when you fill out the federal FAFSA for student aid, of course, it's appropriate then to let them know your income level. But if your child's elementary school is doing a questionnaire and they're asking how much money does mom or dad make, that's one of those things that's protected here under the PPRA, the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment. So if the parent has to opt into that, has to sign the consent form before they can ask your child those questions.
You know, Michael, you are so wonderful, and you're so much more diplomatic than I, because, and I guess maybe because I'm coming from a teacher's perspective, I know what they do with that data. And I do not believe that it's simply about, quote unquote, identifying our children that have mental health issues. First and foremost, we have to recognize that those assessments were initially designed by various drug companies like Pfizer. And the reality is, if you're looking for something, you're gonna find it. When we think about the manual for psychiatry, every single one of us can be diagnosed with something according to those manuals. And with the diagnosis comes, quote unquote, the treatment. So as I said to you before, I've been fighting this for over 20 years when it started with things like ADD, ADHD. And as you know, our children are targeted from the very beginning. If anything happens where that child doesn't comply with the norms of that school system or what they think a child or a student should act like, then they put a label on it. And then they want to intimidate parents into putting their children on these medications. I've had, we did a summit about 10 years ago in commemoration for a mother who lost her son, which they forced her to put him on Ritalin, even though he had a heart condition. And he dropped dead on the basketball court at the age of 16. Nobody gets sued for that. And now that's what they're expanding this, where practically every child, I bet you, is going to be diagnosed as either depressed or anxious or bipolar or you name it, they're going to have a diagnosis for it. Everything that is normal in terms of grief or sadness or, sometimes you're just having a funky day, or sometimes you're dealing with a lot of issues in your family. And the first thing that they're going to want to put onto these families is a medication to create a patient for life. Because once you have that person on that medication at that young age, it is highly unlikely that that person will get off the medication as they get older.
Yeah, and one of the really scary things there from the parent perspective too is once somebody connected with the state, somebody with some sort of state power decides that your child should be on X, then if you as the parent decide, no, my child's behavior gets worse when he's on X, or my child has these heart symptoms or whatever it might be when he's on X, I'm not putting my child on X because that's not best for my child. Then some other state agency can come along and say, well, this is medical neglect. This is you're not treating your child the way we've said you're supposed to treat your child, which is where that fundamental right of parents to direct the upbringing, the education, and the care of their children is so important and why we have to keep fighting for that right.
And that is why I do what I do, because I lost my daughter because of that. They came into our family and they decided that this was going to be the diagnosis. And because I did not go along with medicating her, even though we worked with her, we did things with regards to our lifestyle, her diet, all of those things, and all of her symptomology abated. But the state came in and said, oh, Michelle is not doing X, Y, and Z in accordance with the diagnosis. She's not using the people that we want her to use as medical providers. And so they took my daughter away. And the crazy thing is that you don't want to get into that situation because you, or not you, the majority of us do not have the financial resources to hire legal counsel to navigate through those shark-infested waters. You know, of course they gave me a court-appointed defender or whatever, but that person didn't know anything. I had to be educating that lawyer on what were the medical parameters of what my daughter was dealing with. So obviously that person was not in the capability to be able to adequately defend me and my parental rights. You know, so Michael, tell us a little bit more about what we can do proactively to be able to, number one, know what our rights are, and number two, protect our children and our rights more effectively.
Well, our website is parentalrightsfoundation.org, and we're there to get a general idea and a starting point as to what your rights are. But one of the things that our organization has been working on the last several years, we're trying to bring in better policy and to we've created some model state laws that are beginning to be passed in various states that will protect parents in that situation. Now, for instance, a bill that was passed in Texas a couple of years ago that guarantees parents the right to a second medical opinion. So if they're accused of medical neglect or medical abuse, then the court has to consider the second opinion of the family's doctor. They have to weigh that against the opinion of the child abuse pediatrician or whoever it is that's bringing charges against the parent. In some states, we're also looking at some bills that simply state that, you know, these medical decisions are in the purview of the parents and not the state, that kind of thing. So what we can do proactively is work on passing state law. It's the sort of thing that should be a no-brainer. It should be common sense, and we should be able to leave it to common sense. You know, a child walking down the side of the road to visit the store and then walk back home a mile on a country road in a small little rural area where it's safe. It's a no-brainer that's the parents' right to let them do that. And yet a mom last year famously in Georgia was arrested for that very thing. And so we're having to pass laws to say, no, this is not neglect. This is not abuse. But hey, if that's what we have to do, then that's what we're going to do. We're going to pass those laws. If you're really so, you know, the agency, if the agencies are so stupid or so power hungry that we have to tell them all the things that are not neglect and are not abuse, then that's what we need to do. So proactively get involved in your state in working on passing those laws to carve out parental rights in these areas and keep the state from intruding.
And you know, I will add to that, Michael, what we always tell people, which is create a community for yourself. Because
Yes.
if you are isolated, you are a big, easy target. That's what happened in my situation. I was basically trying to do single mom thing by myself, and I didn't have anyone in my court. And literally, there was no one in the court for me or with me. And so when they see that you're alone, they figure, ah, we got this in the bag. And they know that they're not going to get much pushback. But if you are part of a community, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and you have a bunch of people that are behind you and with you that can go to the press, that can go to, now we have social media and all that kind of good stuff. But it's very important for us to create community, not only in terms of protecting our rights, but also to create a loving and safe environment for our children to be nurtured and to realize that we can't do it by ourselves, you know?
No,
So.
that's excellent advice. And a one facet of that too is if you have opportunity to build a good relationship with your child's doctor, your child's pediatrician, and you find a good one who holds the same values that you do. And I'm not trying to tell you what those values are, but you want somebody who matches your values in terms of vaccinations, in terms of what constitutes an emergency, all those things. If you can find that doctor and build that relationship, that is worth its weight in gold when it comes down to, I mean, because it's generally the doctor who will report some kind of medical thing. And if your doctor's on the same page with you, they're not going to report something as abuse because they understand it. Or another doctor who's not on the same page with you might call it in, and suddenly you've got a nightmare.
And to add to that, you need a doctor who has some chutzpah, some
Yes.
balls. And the reason why I say that is because, again, I was able to have a quote unquote second opinion, meaning that the doctor who was in charge of my daughter's health, she was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. But guess what? When she was called into court and asked to testify, it became, oh, well, I don't remember, I don't recall. It was just flabbergasting to me because I said, oh my God, this woman has been treating my daughter for almost 3 years, and she's going to sit there and say something safe, like, I don't remember and I
Right.
don't recall. It was just the most shattering thing for me to
Yeah.
realize that I was really alone. So, I mean, you may find a good doctor that is nice and that goes along with what you're doing, but I'm saying you also need to find a doctor who's a fighter, who's going to stand up for you and for your child, because we're living in a world right now where these types of doctors are coming under attack. They're losing their licenses. So I understand in a certain way why she did what she did.
Oh, yeah.
Because where we were was a blue county. And so I know that, she's thinking, hey, if I go up against, the Department of Children and Family Services, ooh, that's not going to look good for me, right? I tell you. Now, Michael, one last thing. What would be, in your estimation, one of the most important things for us to do as parents?
I want to say trust your instincts. That's kind of cliche, but it's true. There's always going to be an expert out there with some number of letters behind their name telling you that you're wrong on something, but you're the expert on your child. You spend more time with your child from birth until their fifth birthday, than these experts will ever spend with your child. In fact, I just crunched the numbers a little while ago again to make sure I was remembering this correctly. If you spend clo you're spending close to 16 hours, 16 waking hours a day with your child for those first 4 or 5 years of life. And if a single teacher has your child every subject 6 hours a day, 180 days a year for all 12 years of first through 12th grade, then they will come close to half the number of hours that you spent with your child in those first 5 years of life. You are the expert on your child. Regardless of how many letters a person has behind their name, they may know children, They don't know your child. So, trust yourself, trust what you know, trust your instincts. But then the other thing I would say is continue to know your child. Stay in touch with them, with their lives, with what's concerning them. Listen to them. Don't belittle anything. They're immature, they're young, their problems look little to us, but they're huge to them. So hear them out and stay on their page. And so you remain the expert on your child, and you're in their corner. You're their best defense and their best, strong tower.
Absolutely. Now, I know that you have a wonderful resource for our parents. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
We have on our website an opt-out overview. It's kind of from that Mahmoud v. Taylor case that I talked about before, in that it's on the same topic of parents wanting to opt their children out of various curricula and so forth. And so if your child is in the public school, then we have a page in this guide about your state and what are the opt-out provisions in your state, what they have to let you know about, what you can opt out of, what you might have to opt into, and so if you don't, then you don't need to worry about it. And so the state law is different in every state. And we've put together a guide. It's an opt-out guide, state by state, and it just goes through and lists the legal provisions in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, points you to the source of law in your state, and tells you what rights you have and what requirements a public school has before teaching your child, whether it's on sex ed or whatever it might be, if there's an opt-out provision.
That is an awesome resource, you guys. And the link is going to be in the show notes. I encourage you to definitely go to that site and download that guide because you just never know when you're going to need it. And even before you need it, I encourage you to look through it to become aware of all of these various points that Michael has been stressing today. Well, Michael, thank you so very much for spending this time with us. And is there anything that we have not covered that you think is essential for our parents to know?
I would just share in a nutshell this. Our motto is protecting children by empowering parents. And that really is, that's your role, parent. We want to empower you, give you you have the authority. We want to give you the power against a power-hungry government to stand for your children, protect your children, teach and train and raise your children as you sense and you know is right. You are their best defense.
And you are their God-given protectors. I know these people, they actually believe that our children are theirs, right? But no, your children were blessed to you, and they are the ones that need to be protected by all of us. So, Michael, thank you once again for sharing this time with us, for sharing this valuable information. And for everybody else, until next time, peace and blessings. Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. If you like what we're doing here, please share, subscribe, like us, and leave a comment. Your feedback is very much appreciated.